If you could sit down with one person and ask why people drown, who would it be? For me, the answer is easy. Today's guest has spent more than 3 decades studying drowning, treating drowning victims, investigating drowning deaths, and searching for the answers to one of the most important questions in water safety. Why do people drown when so many of those deaths should be preventable? Here in Hawaii, drowning remains one of the most persistent public health challenges. We have world-class lifeguards, we have warning signs, we have education campaigns, yet people continue to lose their lives in the water. So, what are we missing? Today's guest may be uniquely qualified to help answer that question. Dr. David Spielman is an emergency physician, founder of Sobrasa, Brazil's Drowning Prevention Society, a founder of the International Drowning Researchers Alliance, and the creator of the Spielman Drowning Classification used around the world. Many consider him one of the architects of modern drowning prevention. His work has helped transform drowning from an accident we react to into a public health problem we can understand, measure, and prevent. And perhaps most importantly, his work has helped save lives. Today, we'll discuss what Brazil has learned, why drowning rates have fallen there, and why Hawaii can learn from one of the most influential voices in water safety. Thank you, Dr. Spielman, for joining me today. It's a privilege to have you on Deep Dive into Water Safety. And I just learned from you that you're a surfer, a major surfer, goes every day, and that's great. And hopefully, you're going to come to Hawaii next year and you'll let me know why. So, welcome.
Oh,
Aloha.
thank you. Thank you, Margaret. It's a pleasure to be with you and the Hawaiian people. I love Hawaii. I received some people as Ralph Goto, Peter Davis, and many others from US and Hawaii here in Brazil, and they love it. They tell me that the Rio de Janeiro seems like Hawaii. I'm not sure they are really true. This is a true thing, or this is something that they want to please me.
No, I think that's probably correct. I have not been
Yeah.
there, but there's a lot of people who live here who are Brazilian. That's a big factor here. So I'll have to ask my Brazilian friends.
Please
Right?
do so.
Okay, so let's start this discussion because it's an exciting one. Can we start? And we have a lot to get through, and you said you're just going to punch through this with me. Understanding drowning and drowning myths. Why do people still drown despite everything we know today about drowning prevention?
Each one of them don't believe that drowning is a real thing. That's the main reason. I've been saying a long time ago that we have all tips, materials, equipment, everything on Sobrasa to avoid drowning. But still, I cannot give any tips, anything to them if they don't believe drowning is a true thing. So the World Health Organization has a line that is so important, which says anyone can drown, which means that still us, a good surfer and a good paddling person, can drown if in any case. So everyone needs to be sure to believe that drowning is a real thing. And then you take precautions.
So, how do we get? Well, we can get into that. I don't know how we're going to get them to believe that, but let's work on this next question. You helped redefine how drowning is described around the world. Why do words and definitions matter?
Yeah, I have a lot of drowning words and definitions. And we did research and a publication on an important medical journal about a dictionary of incident and aquatic things. So everyone knows that the meaning of the words is so important. This starts in 1998 when for us Latin American people doesn't make sense to call near drowning. It doesn't make sense that something near drowning is for us in Latin America in the medicine that doesn't seem a real thing when you call some disease as a near. They are not like a near pneumonia or near heart failure or near, it doesn't exist in medical terms. So it's very important that we name it as it means exactly. For example, when you call drowning an accident, you're saying that it's a God thing. It's something that we cannot avoid to happen. So it's important to name as an incident and not an accident. So it is, for example, when you call people a victim of drowning, you are saying that they are victimized. They are not responsible for their act. And now we know by research that 99.8% of drowning is preventable. So you have to name it precisely to not make those mistakes. And this is very important to influence people, the society, to understand what drowning really means.
Well, wow, that's a really interesting statistic. And I will get to Sobrasa and all the data you have in there that blew me away, right? You were just saying it stood out. But the question remains, you just told me about an incident and victimization, but tell me more about how you defined drowning as a process.
It's defined as any water aspiration that goes to the airways instead of swallowing, for example. And so you, for example, we are swimming, or we are paddling, or we are surfing, and we can get a little small aspiration of water that cause cough, and this is drowning. Why this case does not go until that? Because you have the tools to be calm, to know how to get out of this trouble, and you have the water competence. And this is called water competence. You know how to analyze the risk, you know how to get out of any situations. This water competence is important to avoid drowning. And the definition was start in 1998, discussing about how to define exactly drowning. And each one is it was calling by different things, by different means. For example, for the people on the north hemisphere, where it is very cold, they like to say that it's a drowning when the person is even with the life jacket in the water and stays there and dies by hypothermia. And this is not a drowning, this is a hypothermia thing. Or
Right.
for example, a people is in the water and had a convulsive crisis, or for example, an infarct, a heart infarct, for example, and people fail on their consciousness and be unconscious and drown because of another disease. And this is very important to know that it's two diseases in one thing, in one situation. Why drowning is a process and not an event? It's because drowning start with prevention, start with analyzing the risk, understand the behavior, the abnormal behavior of people. that put them in risk to search and to react as a active prevention, and then reactive prevention, and then reaction. And then when the drowning starts, when you are in trouble in the water, the drowning exactly is start. And this is a process that each phase has some action to be taken.
Let's talk
And
about
this,
that process.
yeah, okay.
Just go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I want to hear
No.
more about the process that
Yeah.
you are so famous for and
Yeah,
is being used internationally.
why we create this process? We are trying something like 10, 12 or 15 years ago to understand and name it for everyone terminology and definition for each thing. And we want to do this because we want to compare data. You only can compare data if you have two apples, two pears. You don't have you cannot put all everything in as a fruit and compare apples with pears. You have to be everyone have to call a rescue exactly the same way it happens. So we start to work on this with a few researchers, and we find out that before we start to define each terms involved in drowning, we should understand the whole packet of a drowning timeline. What is the timeline? Which phase? Which people is involved in every time? What is the actions? What is the reactions needed? For example, they call it mitigation. For example, just giving you an example. To give oxygen for a drowning is prevention. No, it's not prevention. It's mitigation. It's at the very end of the drowning timeline. For example, and so many things are were confused about those terminology and how they report this. So it was very important to report appropriately. And that's why we create the drowning timeline, the drowning chain of survival. To make people understand in a very few image what is the process, what is the action to take.
So could you just highlight that for us so people will understand what the process is and that giving oxygen is at the end of that, which I think a
Okay.
lot of people don't understand. And a lot of that is still being misunderstood in media. I have an interview
Yes.
tomorrow with somebody because Good Morning America put a video on highlighting something and Dr. Semstrat, just like you, gave me the contact of the guard that he knows working on that beach to come on and actually articulate that there's misinformation still going on about drowning. So go ahead and tell us about
Okay.
the stages.
You have a, you are meaning about drowning timeline.
Yes.
Okay.
Or
You
classification or whatever you want
no,
to call.
classification is another thing.
I know. Either
I
one.
mean,
Do both.
okay. First of all is the drowning process. The first thing is education, where people are outside the risk, the people are comfortable, and that's the time to educate people, educate on prevention, educate on how to rescue, how to be safety on while rescuing someone, and how to provide first aid and advanced care. This is just the first one to make people aware of the drowning risk, make people understand drowning. Then you have active prevention, which is you taking care to make the environment more safety. Like, for example, to fence pool, to put a flag on the beach, to open the lifeguard tower, to finalize dangers and places where people should be careful. And this is active prevention. You do when there is no one there. And then you have reactive prevention, which is taking care of behavior, dangerous behavior. For example, you see a family going to a rip or near a rip, and you whistle and say, no, it's not the best thing, and you move the family away. This is reactive. Why is that? Because it's almost there on the trouble, on drowning. And then you have the event of drowning, where still not is in need that you aspirate water yet. You are in trouble in water. You understand you are in trouble. You get stress. And if you have the right tools to get out of this stress, you are very well. And I can ask you, Margaret, how many stressful moments you have passed in your life in the water? I have many, but I have the water competence to get out of this.
Right.
So then you have, and this can have different outcomes. You can stress and have the tools to get out. You have, and if you don't have the tools to get out, you're going in distress. So the mind doesn't work exactly as a straight line. You cannot talk with the person in drowning because she or he will be struggling to have to breathe. And this can go to a lifeguard rescue, lay rescue, or no rescue, and then go in this outcome is death. If you rescue someone, you take out of the water, and then a basic life support for drowning start. And then advanced life support for drowning start when the ambulance or the helicopter start. But there is one thing that is very interesting is that we find out years ago that ventilation in drowning is so important. But it's so important that when you go out and see a victim, a person in drowning, a drowning person, in an unconscious level, you try to ventilate the person in water, still in the water. And this saves 300 times more life than if you get out of the water and start to make the mitigation phase, which is provide oxygen or provide basic life support or advanced life support. This, of course, to explain this in the audio is very difficult. I mean,
Right.
it's good to see the picture and you have the exactly the right meaning.
Exactly. Well, you wrote that paper, man, what is it? You gave me so many things to read, but in water resuscitation, is it worthwhile in 2020? That's not very long ago, right? And what you're saying, it's more important to do that in the water than to bring the person out to the ocean, I mean, onto the beach and do it. That's like minutes. That's minutes. That's what
Exactly.
Dr. Semstrat said. Micro details or micro delays matter, right?
Exactly. Because
Wow.
when you have the process of a drowning process, the person start to struggle, and then they aspirate a very little amount of water, and start to cough, And then the second or the third aspiration, they will be increasing in severity. And then about a minute, it depends on the water competence of the person, the risk of the environment, but it's still going to lowering the oxygen level. And then you just when you are in very high severity, you stop breathing and lose consciousness. And this time, the heart's still beating. And if you go there in the water and give a few blows, you are able to recover the person in the water, and he start to breathing by their own again. But if you decide to go to the dry land, it doesn't have time because this stop breathing, this respiratory arrest becomes cardiac arrest in 1 minute to 1 minute and a half. And it's very close. The windows is very close. It's the golden one. I mean, and this can be caused by a surfing trauma. For example, you are surfing, had a hit on the head, you're still alive, but you are not conscious, and then you drown. And if there is no partner, surfer partner to blow, your heart can stop. So it's very quick. But this is, if you understand the process, you understand what to do in each phase of the process.
Okay, so that's really interesting what you just said, what you explained very quickly. But I want to just try to clarify one thing, because Semstrat would come on, Dr. Semstrat would say it's really important for all parents who have children by the ocean to learn CPR with breaths and compressions. So if what you're telling me is you've got only a minute or so, that golden minute, that it's not going to make a difference when I reach the beach. How do I explain that? How do I explain that it's important?
Because it's not exactly, it doesn't make sense to make on the beach, but it make more sense to be earlier as possible.
Okay.
And still, if you get on the beach with a cardiopulmonary arrest, you still have a chance to resuscitate.
Okay.
And you cannot turn on a vehicle, a car, without gas. The
Right.
gas in this case is oxygen.
Okay.
So that's the importance of giving oxygen with the massage, the compression, the heart compression.
Okay. But the best results are in the water right there.
Exactly.
Okay. That's great. Now tell us about your Spielman classification system that everybody is using now, hopefully. Is that correct? And how did you come about that too? Because that's amazing.
When I get on the working with the fire department on Rio de Janeiro, in Rio de Janeiro we had at that time in 90s, we have three drowning resuscitation centers that was founded in the 40s, something like that. And they are founded because was a lot of drowning happens there. So when I start in 90, I became curious about how to communicate best with the lifeguards, how they can communicate with me and says, oh, I have somebody very light drowning or very severe drowning. And the drowning classification severity is exactly to a communication tool with the lifeguard first, and then to the medical staff or the health staff to know exactly in each grade what exactly to do and not waste time doing different things.
Right.
So for each grade of drowning, we have different protocols of treating the drowning. cases. And that's why we create the drowning classification, and everybody use it because it's a way to say, oh, the kid was, for example, swimming, and it was a grade one, for example. Everyone learning how to swim is a grade one, which is just a small aspiration and coughing.
Okay. That's
And this
very
is
interesting.
life. It doesn't need oxygen. It doesn't need big care. But you need to know how to classify this to be sure, to assure yourself you are giving the right treatment.
Well, I think the classification is important because people have kids, and I have a friend that their child didn't know anything about water competence, has moved to Singapore, was walking past a pool, and a kid knocked him into the pool. So nobody really saw it. They got him out, and he was probably a category one, right? But because they had listened to me, they took him to the emergency room because they had heard Dr. Shemstrad say, you should go there in case you don't know. It's better to find out if there's any issues whatsoever, because within the first couple of hours, I hear that's important. Is that correct? If
Yeah,
you kind of.
if you classify correctly the classification of severity, drowning severity classification, it doesn't need for grade one, it doesn't need to go or a rescue, which is a person who has trouble in the water but did not aspirate water. Grade one aspirate a very small amount, which cause cough, just cough, but is breathing normally. Also, they in a half an hour they are very fine. And then you have grade two, which is a very which seems which appears a very small amount of foam in the mouth or nose. And if you hear, it's some sounds like a sounds of water, of air going in and make some bubbles, but very small. And then you have grade three and four, which we call the medical terms, is acute pulmonary edema. It's like he is drowning itself. And so the breathing is like, and it's everyone that sees can have assured that which is very severe. You need to go to the hospital, to ICU, to put a orotracheal tube, to stay in the mechanical ventilation for a 2 or 3 days. And then you have grade five, which is respiratory arrest, which is better to do something in the water and recover the person in the water. And then if nothing is done, you have grade six, which is cardiopulmonary arrest. Then you have to do to do two ventilation. First, five ventilation and then two ventilation with 30 compression.
So is everyone using your classification around the world?
Not everyone, but almost everyone in the developing world, and still a lot of people around the world.
Well, it's really made a difference.
I guess I hope so, because for us it make all the sense to use it. In Brazil, we use in every country, in every state. I know they use in Argentina, Chile, Peru, Venezuela, Mexico, in a few states in US and in Europe, in France, in
Okay.
Australia.
Can I
But
stop you? Did you say a few states, a few states in the United States, not all states?
a few states in the United States,
Only a
yeah, because
few?
in the United States you have a county lifeguards.
Right.
So you have to get in the system of county lifeguard, in each one of county lifeguards, to use the system. In Brazil, we have a state system, which
Okay.
makes more easy to spread. You understand?
So
But
do so
I guess
Hawaii.
they will do it sometime later in the near future.
Well, that's unacceptable. I would like to know if you know Hawaii has is using your classification system.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah. Hawaii needs a little things to change on that, because, for example, to start doing ventilation in water, ventilation out of water, understanding that ventilation is the most important for drowning, not exactly decompression. First you ventilate and then you compress. And this is very important. And I know there's the reason for that is the American Heart Association is the main institution to guide for treatment on drowning too. And until a year ago, 2 years ago, there's no recommendation to ventilate on drowning. And near very very in I think it was December of 2024, we published with the American Heart Association the new guideline, new protocols that says that ventilation is important. And so I think Hawaii and everyone will start to understand the concept that ventilation is essential for resuscitation of drowning.
Well, I think you need to do come over here, not just to surf, but to give us some needed
Will be
awareness.
our pleasure, Margaret. We have a program called Surf Safe, which has now 26 years of giving more than 20,000 surfers training, which we give a 4 or 5 hours class just to surfer, and we now have an advanced thing. We're giving Surf Safe to surfer instructors too.
To surfers, what? What was the last statement?
Instructors. They'll get it. It's my sorry for my English.
I don't speak Portuguese, and I'm
I
not
mean,
a surfer, so.
the person who teach class on
Oh, the
surf,
surf teachers, the teachers.
the teachers. We call it instructors.
Oh, instructors. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes,
No,
thank you
no.
very much.
It's
No.
okay.
That's great. We need to explore that more. So, okay, so I learned something new. Your classification is not used very much in the United States yet, and you've published something with the American Heart Association that says yes, ventilations are needed with compression. And that study just came out within the last 2 years. So I'm going to look into all of this because I think that's very, very important for us to understand. Hawaii has a high drowning rate, and we need to get it down. I know that Brazil has had a high drowning rate, but you decreased that drowning rate by 50% in the last 2 decades, and that's impressive. And we're going to talk about what you did with that. But a couple of more questions. In your experience, what do you think is going to change behavior? You said you have to believe that it's not an accident, but that we all could drown. What do we have to believe? How do we change that behavior? And that's kind of a difficult question, maybe, to answer. And we could go on to something which I also feel is important. Are we focusing too much on swimming and not on aquatic competence? And how do you create a culture where safe behavior becomes the norm? That kind of is kind of a belief system, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, we find out that we need to get the experience each inside of each person. For example, when I talk with you about drowning, I have to ask you, have you passed any trouble in the water? And you will go there and in that mind and recall, oh yeah, there is some day that I was very troubled, I was stressed. So this is the one that we need to pull the people to their space. And then if you get it, if you get succeed, you can give them some change behavior. And we still need to. Drowning is too complex, and because it doesn't happen only on the road, it happens in beaches, pools, rivers, waterfalls, bathrooms. It's so many places, and their places are so different. In drowning cause, and they affect different age, they affect different behaviors, and that's the complex thing and the challenging thing. If I will talk with you, Margaret, I will drag our talk to paddling. You know how anyone which was paddling and get drowned and die. And you recall, oh yeah, I know somebody that fall down. It was not using a life vest. And then I can talk with you, and you are interested in my talking. You understand? And this is the most challenging piece of thing. And as the drowning cause is so complex, and it focuses on drowning risk. In one side, and the another side is water competence. It's a balance between drowning risk and water competence. So you have to bring the person to that area to affect them, and then you can talk about prevention or whatever you want to talk. For example,
Go ahead.
one way we use a lot to go to prevention, to talking about prevention, is to call for, do you wanna know how to rescue? Do you wanna know how to do basic life support in drowning? And everyone thinks that this is the most important part. We bring them with this message, and then we give 80% of prevention. You understand? It's a bait. Like they do with us, wherever we are in the shopping or the supermarket, they have baits for us. So you have to understand their behavior, their interests, to then to connect with them.
Well, give
And
me an example of a bait, like you're saying 80% would be prevention. Just give me an example of what you would do for people who think I'm
for
confident,
example,
I'm a strong swimmer,
Instead of saying that, Margaret, do you want to know how to prevent drowning? I would say, Margaret, you want to learn about how to rescue someone in drowning, which is more heroic. It's more, and they say, oh, yeah, of course. But when you come in, I will teach you prevention. And, I think the changing in behavior and a culture change, it takes time. It takes a lot of effort, and it takes a lot of education. So education is the cornerstone. It's the main alicerce that we need to build a culture and drowning reduction, for example. So, but I think there's steps behind this, which is more important and have a related with your question. If you ask me, what is the most valuable thing you have in Sobrasa? I would say to be together, to unite people around one mission. If I can call you to get in on my side, and everyone on my side, for example, the health people, health medical staff, the swimming teachers, the athletes, the surf, the aquatic persons, the everyone who is involved and at risk of drowning, and put them all together as much along the years. For example, now we have 10,000 volunteers working on Sobrasa,
Wow.
which makes 17 prevention action every day. I will not be able to do that if we can united in one mission. What is the mission? Avoid drowning. That's the mission.
So tell us about Sobrasa and how you started it. And I read about it, this 87 piece document with all
Oh,
kinds of videos and everything
yes.
else. And what I saw was lots of data. And I want to talk about data because that's got to do with if we're all measuring the same thing, apples and apples and oranges to oranges, fatal versus non-fatal. So tell us what you've done with Sobrasa to bring the drowning rate down in Brazil.
It begins with a very funny situation. I start to work with the lifeguards on the beach, and I have a lot of doubts, a list of questions. Oh, when I call this, I do what I'm gonna do that. A lot of questions. And I start to write, because at that time you need to write and put in the mail. And I start to write to a few medical doctors around the world, and they invite me to go to Wales on United Kingdom and to a big event that was a event on drowning. It was 1993 or 94, something like that.
Cutting
And
edge.
I went there, and it's everything new for me. And I started looking for every doctor, and it was not so much, maybe 10 or 12 there. And I start to ask my list of questions. Oh, if the guy stop hard on the sand, should I go to the near drowning resuscitation center? Should I put in an ambulance? Should I call the helicopter? Should I do everything on the place? It's a lot of questions I had. And I had the questions that I had on operational, on the field. And everyone I ask, the person doesn't have an answer. Until one guy said, no, look for him. He will answer you. And I go there and I ask him a few questions. And they said, oh, sorry, David, but I only did resuscitation in three persons and drowning three persons. And I look, oh my God, I have 3 years of working on lifeguard. I did more than 20, 30. And I realized that I need to go back to my country and build something in my country on research, on data, on protocols, on treatment. Everything has to be built on where we have the experience. And I just had to link the research, the scientific field on the field of on the lifeguard field. And that's something that you have, it's a unique thing on the world. And I realized that, and this is something that we have a problem. And this has something about your question too. We have the science saying what has to be done, and we have the lifeguards, the operational field, and they don't talk. They are not linked. You understand? In the majority of cases, and they need to be linked. The
Yes.
questions need to be made by the lifeguard, not the science. The science need to explore the question, the answer, and not create their own questions, which is science, but it doesn't matter. You understand?
I totally understand. We have a program here, which you've initiated, called Watchtower, something I plan to interview David Rodriguez out of California, which is for the lifeguards to actually put in their little computers now the incidents, what's going on. But there's not enough data, right? There's not enough. It doesn't tell me anything. So I have a sheet that's for the last year in specifically Kauai, talking about the number of incidents, where it was snorkeling, which I'd like to have your advice on this, but it doesn't tell me anything else. It doesn't tell me anything. So I'm thinking, what an opportunity to be able to get better data that you talk about. And this is what I want you to talk a little bit more about, because if we don't have the data, we can't solve the problems. We're not asking the right questions. As a researcher, scientist, lifeguard, and doctor, you know all of this. So
Exactly. Exactly.
I
It's
think.
like, I mean, I compare like a general in a war, and the general says, "My army goes forward," and has a sergeant behind or beside them and says, "General, there is no army anymore to go forward." You understand the brain is disconnected with the arms. And we need to work connecting all the pieces.
Right.
And it's a challenging thing.
No, I think we have to keep talking about it. It's the reason I started this show. And people like you coming on the show is making a difference. People have listened to Dr. Semstrat, they listened to Dr. Tipton, and it's making a difference. It takes a while. A person who wrote our water safety plan that I sent to you, Allison Schaefer, said, "Yeah, Margaret, we haven't made much progress in legislature, but people are starting to talk more." And that's correct. People are starting to say, "Wow, I guess we do have a problem. Oh my, we should know about CPR. Oh, this is what we should be doing." They're starting to actually think, like you said, my own belief that I could drown and I should take prevention. And so we brought Bruce Hopkins over here to do something innovative in a rip current clinic that he's doing around the world. So we could talk about rip currents. We could tell people where they are. We can say, be calm, but that's not helping people. And I
No.
was amazed that we had 30 people get in the ocean in the horrible day, in the middle of the week. Two groups of people I thought had never been in the ocean before, and felt like they got to experience a rip and what to do in it, and not and and to be water competent, have some survival skills. So if they get stuck in one, they're not going to panic. So I agree with everything you're saying. We just have to keep pushing and pushing, because we have the research, we have the information you're doing. We just need to figure out how to connect the lifeguards with the research. So that's why we're here. So let's move on here. So tell me, Brazil has reduced drowning over time. Was the most important breakthrough a research breakthrough, a policy breakthrough, or a cultural change? What do you think? What do you think made that change?
I think it, all of us, all of us, all of those you said, because it's one part is what the science tell us, what the data tell us.
Right.
Right? So as you know the problem, you can fix it more appropriately. It's
Yes.
something like in medical thing. Like if you have fever, I can give you a remedy for fever, but I'm not treating exactly the cause. So if I know exactly the cause, the drowning data, I can fix it more target, like a sniper. I can shoot exactly where is needed. For example, I will not tell the people on the boat how to prevent drowning on the house. I will not tell people that they don't have the need to care for children, how to take care of the children at the house. So if I understand the problem, I can give more best solutions. And that's exactly what medicine do. If you have a very good diagnosis, you have a more likely possibility to give right treatment.
That's very good. I'm on the Water Safety Task Force. I sent you the information about that, and I have a Zoom meeting on Sunday night. So, in Hawaii, and we'll make this brief because I want to go on to other things, and maybe we're just going to have you come back at another time. 90% of the incidents for tourists are around snorkeling, fatal and non-fatal. It's unbelievable. And yet, we don't seem to understand what's going on. So, what do you think?
Did you saw our published paper on snorkeling?
No.
I have a published paper on snorkeling, which somebody from Hawaii, I can't recall the name, were in the group, and
Dr.
it's very,
Foti?
what is
A
it?
Dr. Foti? Or
Not sure. I think it's a woman.
okay. I don't
But
know.
I can
Okay.
send you later, no
Okay.
problem. I think it's very easy to understand the snorkeling problem. It's not easy to give solutions, but it's easy to understand. People goes to Hawaii to get in the water, the beauty, and they like to see the water underwater, but they have no experience. And when you're snorkeling, you have to know how to get the water out of the snorkel. If you don't, you're going to aspirate, you're going to be a drowning person. And that's the fact. And they came up with the face mask, which is worse because the person is feeling very, very comfortable and they get in the water. But when they dive a little, the water goes in and they don't know how to get the water out. Now, this is a drowning scenario.
Right.
And I understand that in Hawaii, maybe the majority of people are tourists because Hawaii is a very tourist place.
Right.
So you connect two things. The people who doesn't have any water competence with the beautiful thing asking for you to come in the water to snorkeling. And that's something that's it
So what are
doesn't
we to do?
can't come right. It has to be something wrong.
Yes, I think Dr. Trapani in Italy did something with three children that ended up in the emergency room, full face mask. She goes, "No way should they have that. It says children under the age of 5 shouldn't use them, but it's got to do with the weight of the child and their volume that they can take in." That little bit of research got the Italian ministry to go challenge the manufacturers of full face masks to do something. That they're a respiratory piece of equipment, not a toy, right? And so that's what I think. Hannah Van Wart from the same kind of place did 20, did a huge amount of extensive research on full face masks and said, we don't need more research. We need to make the manufacturers more responsible for what they're producing, right? So.
The other thing that happens here in my area in Rio de Janeiro, which has more than 50 or 60 surf schools and have more a lot of tourists coming in, is that it doesn't matter for the people who is want to make money. They want to sell. They want to sell a class. They want to sell the material. They want to rent the equipment. And for the snorkeling, the problem is worse because you can buy on many shops and you don't have to have license, nothing, learning process, nothing. So it is something that unfortunately it's a reality. I don't know how to react or how to make a solution for that. It's difficult.
Right. I guess we're just going to have to be creative and innovative and target the areas where we have the highest snorkeling and focus on doing much more, as you said, education, but getting them to buy into what we're trying to, I guess we'll try that, right? In some kind of preventive way.
One way that I might suggest to do, we have been doing this, is to put some very small video on the way they are coming in their airplanes, for example.
With that, we're having trouble getting the airlines to do that for us, and we keep asking if you have any great solutions, let me know. Are they doing that coming into Brazil, the airlines?
We are doing not in airlines, we are doing buses
Ah, okay.
on internal tourists.
Oh,
So
that's good.
buses that is coming from the inside the country to the beach, we are putting some videos talking about drowning, talking about going to places where there is lifeguard on duty. For example, you know that in Brazil we have places that doesn't have lifeguard have a risk of drowning death by 60 times.
You see,
So
that's a good statistic that we should probably be gathering the data to know, to be able to tell people. You know, we tell them go to a lifeguarded beach, but if we tell them you have a 60% chance higher of drowning at a nine at an unguarded beach, that will
and
get
you can
attention.
and you can put in you can put in a big sign like, here there is no lifeguard. Be my guest to be the next drowning person. Like you say, no, if you're going here, the probability to be drowning is very high.
Yes, I think the statistics you used in your organization were really compelling to me. They made me think about a lot. Like you said, in Brazil, somebody drowns every 5 minutes. Is that correct? Something like that?
90 minutes. Every
90 minutes.
drowning death every 90 minutes.
That's scary.
It's how they said it's a Boeing airplane crashing and dying everyone every month.
See, that's the kind of data we need.
Relation you need to impact people. You
Yes.
understand?
Yes, because
Or for example, four children die by drowning every day. One inside the house. This is something you need to how to say summarize your data and pick the right one to impact people with the impressive thing.
well, everybody should look at Sobrasa for sure. And you're saying we here in Hawaii need better data. We cannot solve the problems of drowning for any group unless we have accurate data. And we don't have that yet, right? So what you're saying is we need to link the research that's there with the lifeguards to make it happen. And I agree with that. That's a really good point. And I plan to bring that up at my water safety meeting about.
Yeah, but be careful because many times I see people doing too much data and they cross over the need to take actions. You understand? It
Yes.
doesn't need to continue working on data because you have already good data to put it out.
No, I agree. They're telling me now, Ralph Godot told me, well, Margaret, we need more research on snorkeling. And I'm going, I don't know. I think we have the research. Why don't we just connect it and create the best message we possibly can? That makes more sense to me. So.
Please give my best to Ralph. It's a very good friend of mine.
He's a great guy, but
Yeah.
I said, okay, then why don't we do a pilot piece of research at Hanama Bay where they actually do a video for people? They must, because it's a heritage site. And if they want to go snorkeling and they have to be careful of the reefs, they have to watch a video. But we have snorkeling deaths there. I mean, drowning fatalities all the time. And the week before I talked to him, there were two. So I said, well, maybe we do a piece of pilot research there to find out what's
Yeah.
happening. What did
Yeah.
people get from the video? Did they listen to it? Any of that. So maybe that's kind of a compromise, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, well, that's good. I want to know, because we have a little bit of time left, tell me about IDRA, the International Drowning Research Alliance, and how that started, because that has really made a big difference on the show. Everybody that's been collaborating with me is part of that, or has been, and it's amazing to me. So I think people need to know more about that alliance.
Yeah, the idea was what born in 2012, I think, 12 or 2010, which is together people with experience on Subraza, that our most valuable thing was unite people around one mission. I proposed to a few people. We were in Ireland in a congress, and I start to propose to a few people, a few scientists, to get together and start to do something that has no barrier. We accept everyone that wants to get on the science or on the research thing, field. And we were very happy to say that we have at least 60, I think 65 or 70 scientists around the world working in NIDRA. And it's very easy to come in, no payment. It's more a local where you can exchange information, collaboration, helping each other, knowing each other, knowing people who is more expert in each field. So it's a society or a alliance that has no barrier. We accept everyone. So I think it's the most valuable to exchange information. And this has been maybe 12 years of foundation or 13 years of foundation.
Well, it's made a difference on this show because I've had many people on
Oh,
the show,
yeah.
part of that alliance, and we're getting research out to people that haven't heard it before. And that makes a difference, I think, because you're doing great work. And you're just telling me that I didn't know this, that you did work with the American Heart Associations to change the requirements on that. That's an important piece of information. Maybe a lot of people know, but I don't think the person listening knows that. So they go to a CPR course, they should get one that has breaths also if you're living around water.
Yeah, for sure. It's very important. Our founders are Catarina Queiroga, Mike Tipton, Joost Biddens, Just Sempro, Roberto Barcala, and Jonathan Weber. That's what's the core group that start everything in Ireland.
Well, I think I'm going to have to. My goal is to have everyone of that group on.
Ah, you should.
Yes, I will.
You're gonna love it.
I know it's made a difference to the show. People, talk about it. So Dr. Semstrat came on and talked about micro delays matter. In the US, We're working on this thing that lifeguards are not seen as first responders. I don't know if they are in Brazil, but they're not here. And we just had a resolution, which is something in our legislature, which is not a law, but something that's kind of like a New Year's resolution. We believe that lifeguards are first responders. It's a first step, but it's not what we need, really. We need more than that. What does that all mean? The micro delays matter. What was he talking about?
You recall that we are talking about how fast it is drowning. You
Yes.
have, for example, for kids is more fast, but for one adult on the beach, it takes just a couple of minutes, 2, 3, or 4 minutes to go for a very healthy person to a death, a cardiopulmonary arrest. This is what Justin was talking about, the micro delay. 5 seconds, 2 seconds can make the difference if you act fast enough. You understand?
Yes.
So, a few years ago, lifeguards around here wait for the person to be drowning, I mean, to be in trouble to make a rescue. Nowadays, they don't do that. They avoid or forbidden some person to get in the water in those conditions. You know, this is makes a reality for us that drowning is too fast, too critical, it too silent. So you have a very fast drowning happens in a seconds. You have they get critical in a seconds, in very short minutes, and all is silence. You don't have, for example, for the movies, it's always somebody shouting for help. It doesn't happen in real life.
Right.
So this is the message, very strong, that the message can have to come out to all, everyone. To everyone understand, everyone can drown. No one should. And this is a very strong message.
That's a good one. Say that again.
Anyone can drown. No one should. This is the World Health Organization thematic. Our Sobrasa is to prevent, is to help, or to save. To prevent is to save. When you are preventing, you are saving. Avoid drowning with education. Use education to avoid drowning. And that's a very interesting thing because you first say that if you are preventing, you are a hero. You don't need to rescue someone to be a hero. And then you say, the best tool is education, to know how what a competence before anything happens.
How would you define water competency? I won't keep stay on this too long, but
Competence is, and it's very large thing. You can be water competence for a pool, like a small child, children that a child, small child that learn how to float, for example, and how to get out of the pool. And you can have water competence for 10 meters waves, for example. And this is a very large. And there it's so important that you give to the person can fit themselves on water competence. So we publish a research in 5 water competence levels, and goes to I don't know how to float, and then I know how to float, then I know how to dislocate, to move on. I know how to move on in 4 styles, or The five one, the top one, I know how to swim in many water scenarios. So for each grade like that, for each step, you have a risk of drowning on pool, rivers, and beaches. You
Wow,
understand?
I didn't
And
get
this is a
that.
publication already published also.
Can you send me that research?
Of course, I can send you. Of course, I
Do
will. I
that.
will.
I have my whole packet of research, but that one wasn't in there.
So, sorry for that.
No, that's okay. When did you do that?
You mean this one, water competence?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's because I know everyone needs to put themselves in a stage to know. Oh, for example, I get it very used to go to this beach, but today is a storm. My water competence doesn't match the risk of the environment. You understand?
Yes.
Every time the risk of environment get up or upper to the your water competence, a drowning occur. So, for example, you put it the mother, and this is very used. Sorry, this is very frequent. A mother put their child on a swimming class. The child is getting 12 feet or 12 meters or 25 meters with no problem. Then the family goes to the beach and think that it's the same. It's not the same. And it every one of us who enjoy to go to the water sports or water leisure needs to fit themselves on a step to know how to react. And of course, women do this much more efficiently than men. For example, in Brazil, men drowns in death 6 times more often than women. But between 15 and 24 years age, there's 17 more likely to drown in death than woman. 17. And why is that? It's behavior. It's the macho man thing. That range of age especially goes to the which we call testosterone side effect. And they go in two or three men, for example, or teenagers, and one has the water competence to go out, but the other two does not. And then they hitch each other, say, "No, you are chicken out. Go, let's go." And it turns in a drowning situation.
Do you have a message for them? Because I had Will Kuhn on from Australia who said exactly the same thing. They had done research and they go, well, we know it's dangerous to go out, but we go out.
It's too difficult to say to a teenager any message, any
Me though.
message at all. They have to, ex a message doesn't hit them. What hit them is water safety programs. We
Okay.
put them on the water, we put them on pool, we put them on surfing, of course, with safety, but try to them to realize what is the water competence they have and what they should be avoiding?
One of the last few questions is water safety education in the schools in Brazil? I didn't put that on my guideline.
We don't have in the school, but in Sobrasa we have keen at the school, which is that the crab behind me.
Okay.
It's our mascot, which goes to a school and read one of our five comic books. and see one of five video cartoon videos, and we give a class to them, and this is the most top one of the most top prevention program, water safety program we have here in all the states, but not in curriculum of which will be great to do that.
To do what? What did you say?
To have this program inside the primary school
Oh, it's
curriculum.
not. Oh, in the primary schools, you have it after school. Is that what you said?
No, it's not after. We have a visit only.
I
We
see.
visit them and give the program.
It's a start because once you have it in the school, then what you're talking about is a system approach to things. You are creating education for more than just the child, but their family and the community and the culture to understand that it's an important priority. That's what we're
And
doing.
the teacher too.
Yes. Yes.
For example, we have another program who would call Pool More Safe. This program is teaching the swimming teachers how to do a class, a safety class, and how to do some games which give them some tips on drowning prevention. And we know that the parents doesn't not listen well, but we put all the kids on the border of the swimming pool and talk with the kids, knowing that the parents is listened to, and we give a comic book, and they have to read for the child. They have to accept the tips. They have to follow the tips. So it's a way to get on in the house, in the family.
That's excellent. There is a group here run by Dwayne DeSoto, who's been doing something for 2 decades called Nakamakai. And I can send you that. He does a similar
Please.
kind of program, but it's culturally based. And he's now trying to get into the schools. It's an excellent program because he takes just what you say. He has comic books, he has all things that are water safety education for young children. But so far, it's only been handed to the schools to say, well, you can use it, but nobody's enforcing it. So the teacher, that's the important piece. But he also, in his work, gives teacher education credit, which is something they have to have. They always have to have continuing education. So if they come to one of his workshops in the summer when he's on the islands, with their kids, they get continuing education. They learn about sailing, voyaging, canoeing, navigating, as well as water competency. It's an excellent program, and I don't think we should reinvent the wheel. I think we should take that and put it in the schools. That's my feeling.
Exactly. We actually need to spread the arms, our arms, multiply our arms. And the way to do that is to have volunteers work, or the teachers or at the school, it's a very good volunteers to spread this water safety message.
Well, I can't thank you enough. There is really good information you gave today, and I've learned a lot in a short period of time. And now I understand why everybody who has talked about drowning prevention brings up your name. So I want to end with this. There are very
Thank you.
few people who can honestly be called pioneers in this field. Dr. David Spielman is one of them. For more than 30 years, he's challenged conventional thinking, built the evidence base for drowning prevention, and helped shape how the world understands drowning. What I appreciate most about his work is that it gives us hope. Because if drowning follows patterns, those patterns can be recognized. If risk factors can be identified, they can be reduced. And if drowning can be understood, it can be prevented. For Hawaii, that's an important message because every drowning leaves a family asking why. And every lesson we learn brings us one step closer to ensuring another family never has to ask that question. My sincere thanks to you, Dr. David Spielman, for joining us today. And I hope you'll come back and please send me your water competency paper and the snorkeling paper. That would be fantastic.
I will right away.
Okay.
Thank you,
And
Margaret.
is it winter there?
It's
What's the
winter. It's winter, but it's 20 centigrees.
Oh, okay. You don't have any down jacket on or something, because.
No, not at all.
Oh, good, 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 good. All right, we'll be in touch. I look forward to you coming to Hawaii. And, maybe there's some way we can collaborate and do something. That would be fun.
Please be my guest.
Okay.
It will be a pleasure for us, Margaret.